Chapter 14. We were standing beside the tank with water pouring from our clothes when we heard Lil's cheerful voice.
Hi,
she said.
How'd it go?
Lil, where are you?
I asked, trying to find her in the darkened room.
Can't you see me over here?
The little bat gasped.
Don't tell me that salt water makes you go blind, because if it does...
No, Lil, it's just dark in here, that's all. Do you mind if we have some light?
Well, of course. I keep forgetting that just because it's light enough for me, that doesn't mean...
Lights, I said, flicking my fingers toward the ceiling where the witch's lights bumped together. A rosy glow filled the room, making everything look soft and dreamy.
So, you're back,
said a voice, and I turned to see Grisina emerge from her bedchamber. Her face was pale, and she had large, dark circles under eyes red and swollen from crying.
Here, let me help you with those wet clothes.
Pointing her finger at us, she muttered a few words. There was a blast of warm air, and our clothes were dry, although my dress suddenly felt a size smaller, and Edric's tunic looked shorter. Maybe Mother had been right when she said that Grisina might find it difficult to concentrate on magic that didn't concern Haywood.
Thank goodness you're home, I said. Are you all right? Have you spoken with my mother?
Grisina scowled.
She pounced on me the minute I got back. Your mother always has been a worrier. I've already checked out Beltran's wizard, and he won't be a problem. He's Olafat's brother, Olebald, and he's even less competent than his sibling. I can't do anything about him until he crosses our border, so it will have to wait until after I've seen to Haywood.
Where did you find Haywood? I asked my aunt.
I haven't yet, she said, as fresh tears trickled down her cheeks. My mother is wicked. I'll never forgive her as long as I live. She laid false trails, and I'm still trying to find the real one. I came to pick up a few things. I'll be leaving again soon.
But what about Beltran? Mother says that
I told you there's nothing to worry about.
Grisina sounded impatient.
Your mother jumps at shadows. Right now, the only thing that concerns me is taking care of my darling Haywood.
Is there anything I can do to help?
Just tell me what you've gotten so far and what you still need to find.
It wasn't exactly what we expected, but we got the gossamer hair of Mother of Pearl. I opened my pouch and handed the hair to Grisina. And here's your comb, I said, handing her that as well. Your friends were very helpful.
Can they have the fruit tarts now?
Said Lil. Grisina shrugged.
They can if they're hungry.
I love those things, Edric said, hurrying toward the table where Lil had just uncovered a platter of tarts. After stuffing a tart in his mouth, he carried the platter to the soft, moss-colored carpet in front of the hearth. I sat down beside him and held my hands toward the warmth of the fire. Lil landed on the floor and cocked her head to the side. Peering up at me, she asked,
"What else do you need to get?"
"Since we have the hair, we need the breath of a dragon green, a feather from an aged horse, and the husk of a magic bean.
You don't have to get them in any special order."
Grisina wiped her eyes with the back of her hand and settled into one of the chairs.
"And I know where you can go next, although you'll have to wait until tomorrow morning. You need your rest, and the magic market is closed now anyway."
She pointed at the tapestry behind me, and I turned around to look. It was an old tapestry that had hung on the wall since before I was born. The picture showed a town centered around a marketplace. It was fairly dark now, with only a few lights glowing in the windows. When I was younger, I'd spent hours studying it, delighted with the way it changed from one second to the next.
"Not only is that the map of a real place," said Grisina, "it's also the best way to reach the magic market. Just touch the wall surrounding the fountain, and you'll go straight there. Touch it again when you want to come home. You should be able to get the magic beans at one of the stalls, and someone might have the feather or the dragon's breath as well."
Do you think they sell swords at that market? Asked Edric. I need to get a new one.
They probably do, said Grisina. They sell just about everything there.
I gave my aunt a sketchy account of our trip into the saltwater bowl, leaving out a few details like the sea monster, the shark, and Nastia Nautica's threat to chop off our heads. I'd tell her later, when she didn't have so much else to worry her.
I want to thank you, Grisina said when I'd finished my tale. You don't know how much it means to me that you two are helping.
She smiled at us through drying tears.
I couldn't possibly look for Haywood as well as find those things. I don't know what I'd do without you.
We're glad we can help, I said. After saying good night, I went downstairs to sleep in my own bed. Tired as I was, I still couldn't fall asleep because I couldn't stop worrying. Without Grisina's help, my father's men would be unprepared to face an opponent armed with magic. Yet my aunt wasn't doing a thing about it. If only I hadn't led her to Haywood. If only I hadn't persuaded her to go see Grandmother. I didn't agree with my mother very often, but this time I couldn't help feeling that she was right to worry. Even if Grisina couldn't do anything until Beltran crossed the border, she should be trying to find out what he had planned. When I finally drifted off, my dreams were filled with weaponless soldiers marching into battle against some faceless horror. I didn't stop tossing and turning until I'd heard a rooster crow at one of the neighboring farms. When I woke later that morning, my stomach was already growling, so I headed to the kitchen for something more substantial than fruit tarts. I saw more soldiers than usual on the way there, including some I'd never seen before. The cooks were busy, but they took the time to tell me that Edric had come and gone already, having eaten enough for two grown men. He was considered a phenomenon in the kitchen, and the cooks and scullery maids were keeping a running bet on how much he could eat. I was on my way out, my stomach pleasantly full, when I ran into my mother.
"Did you talk to Grisina last night?" she asked. "What did she tell you?"
"She said that she can't do anything until Beltran has crossed the border." Mother bit her lip and nodded.
"That's what she told me, too. But she's wrong, you know. There are so many things she could be doing to get ready. I'd feel much better if only she would make some sort of effort."
"I'm sure she knows what she's doing," I said, although I really didn't believe it.
"I hope you're right. I can't talk to her anymore. She's too distracted to concentrate on anything important and only wants to talk about Haywood. I couldn't dissuade her from leaving again, although I told her that she should stay here and plan her strategy. The woman has lost all sense of responsibility to this kingdom. She was so distraught. If she isn't able to find Haywood or turn him back into a man, I'm afraid she might become melancholy, and then she'll be no use to anyone. That's what happened the first time he disappeared, you know."
I left my mother talking to her ladies-in-waiting and hurried through the crowded halls. Armed soldiers stood guard outside the throne room door, further evidence that my father was preparing for war. Reaching my aunt's rooms, I found Edric waiting in a chair by the fireplace and Lil seated on Grisina's work table beside a small cloth bag.
"Grisina left last night after you went to bed," the little bat said. "She asked me to give you this."
"What is it?" I asked. Peeking inside, I saw a handful of coins.
"It should be enough for the magic beans," said Lil. "Now you'd better go. You're already getting a late start."
Although the tapestry took up a large part of one wall, the picture of the fountain wasn't very big. Our fingers covered most of it when Edric and I touched it at the same time. I knew it was woven cloth, but the picture felt as cold and smooth as real stone. A rush of air made me blink. There was a brief sensation of flying, and suddenly we were standing beside a marble fountain. The fountain was on a small raised platform, giving us a good view of the market. Pausing at the top of the steps, I tried to make sense of the market's layout, but the arrangement of stalls and carts didn't seem to be in any order. "Let's look around," said Edric, taking the steps two at a time. A yellow canopy the color of daisies shaded the stall at the bottom of the steps. Pictures of tankards had been worked into the canopy's fabric, and on the shelf running the length of the stall, a dozen pewter tankards rested, polished and ready for sale. Edric stopped a few yards away, his mouth gaping in disbelief. A gray tabby cat with white paws stood behind the counter, polishing a tankard it had taken from a crate. "Will you look at that?" said Edric, staring at the cat. "Close your mouth, Edric," I said, nudging him with my elbow. "It's not polite to stare." "But he's a cat, and this is a magic marketplace. You can't expect it to be like a normal one."
"Tankards for sale," sang the cat. "Bottomless tankards for sale here. Never run out of ale again. Fill it once and it stays filled, no matter how much you drink."
"My uncle would like one of those," said Edric, "except he'd find it a challenge and try to drink it dry."
"We're not here to buy gifts for people. We're here for the bean, remember?"
"The bean, right. Hey, cat," said Edric. "Do you know where we can buy a magic bean?"
"No, sorry, mate. I'm new here and don't know the other stalls yet. You might ask the dog two stalls over. He makes deliveries and seems to know his way around. Can I interest you in a tankard?"
"Maybe another time. Thanks, cat."
The pale blue canopy of the next stall showed a picture of a cloud, its cheeks puffed out with lines curling away from its mouth as if it were blowing something.
"What do you have there?" Edric asked, pointing to a carved wooden box resting on the counter.
A young man with straw-colored hair flipped open the lid and removed four slim pieces of glass dangling from a round silver plate. A silver cylinder hung in the midst of the glass pieces, and as we watched, the man tapped the cylinder. It bumped against the glass strips, setting off a tinkling chime. A breeze sprang up in the stall, ruffling Edric's hair and the few curls that had sprung loose from my braid.
"You see?"
said the young man, tapping the cylinder again and setting off a brisker wind.
"It's a wind chime, and its operation is simple. Each touch amplifies the effect. Amaze your friends, confound your enemies, command the wind whenever you wish."
"We have other shopping to do first," I said, seeing from the expression on Edric's face that he was wavering. The cat had mentioned a dog at the second stall over, but the only occupant was an old woman dressed all in blue.
"May I help you, young miss?" she asked. "I have some lovely stones for sale."
Setting a small chest on the counter, she lifted the lid, displaying an assortment of colored stones.
"Stones for every occasion. Stones that can make you successful or brave. Stones that will cure a stomach ailment or make a toothache go away. These purple stones will banish bad dreams, if that's what's troubling you."
She held a violet-colored stone in the sunlight.
"It's very nice, I'm sure, but it's not what I'm looking for. Actually, I was told that a dog worked at this stall who might be able to help us. He makes deliveries."
The old woman pursed her lips and shut the lid with a snap.
"Oh, you want Archie. He's off on a delivery now, and I don't expect him back any time soon."
"We're looking for a magic bean. Do you know where I could purchase one?"
"A magic bean, you say?"
The woman shook her head.
"Sorry, I can't help you with that."
A knot formed in the pit of my stomach. Finding the bean might not be as easy as I'd thought.
"Emma, come over here,"
called Edric from a stall on the other side of the narrow alley. A beefy man stood behind the counter holding a stout stick in his hand. Stuffing dribbled from a cloth dummy hanging from a post in the corner.
"This stick is amazing. Watch what it can do."
Edric nodded to the man.
"Beat it, stick," said the man, tossing the stick at the dummy.
Whirling through the air, the stick beat the cloth body with loud thwacks and puffs of dust. The dummy swung from the pole, twisting and turning with every whack of the merciless stick, until I thought its seams couldn't possibly hold together any longer.
"You use it if someone tries to steal from you," explained Edric. "You never know when you might meet a thief."
I shook my head and started to walk away. "I don't think so. It would be just as easy for the stick to be used against the owner as against a thief. I'll take my chances without the stick, thank you."
Edric ran after me. "But Emma, you take too many chances. At least with the stick, I'd know you were safe."
"I am safe," I said, giving Edric my most dazzling smile. "I have you with me, don't I?"
Edric appeared to be speechless. He stared at me for a moment, perhaps to see if I was joking. But I didn't let him see how I really felt. I didn't want a stick to protect me. I could protect myself.
"You're right," he said, shrugging. "Let's go find that bean."
We continued between the stalls, pausing to examine the items that interested us, like the acorns that could hold an entire wardrobe and the shoes that could carry a person enormous distances. But we still didn't see the dog or hear anyone hawking fresh vegetables. I was beginning to wonder if we'd ever find the stall when I saw a little dog with white, fluffy fur carrying a leather bag in his mouth.
"Pardon me," I called to the dog. "Are you Archie?"
The little dog stopped abruptly and turned to look at me, the bag gripped tightly between his teeth. He nodded without opening his mouth.
"We were told that you might know where we can find someone who sells magic beans," I said.
Archie tilted his head to one side and looked me up and down. I must have passed his inspection, because he set the bag on the ground, although he was careful to place both front feet on top of it.
"Look for the stall with the dark green canopy. Old Man Bosley is the only one I know who sells magic beans. If he's not there, ask Milky White. She's learning the trade."
"Who is Milky White?" I asked. But the little dog had already grabbed his bag and trotted off through the crowd, his plumed tail swishing. I found Edric nibbling the leg of a roast partridge. He offered me a wing and didn't seem offended when I refused.
"We need to look for a green canopy, a man named Bosley, and someone called Milky White," I said.
"It must be another cat. I can't believe what they have these cats doing. I tell you, though, that cat back there really knows how to cook a partridge," he said, smacking his lips.
It took us a while to work our way across the marketplace, as Edric wanted to stop at every food stall. It wasn't until we'd reached the last row of vendors that we found the right one. A large stall shaded by a canopy of darkest green. It reminded me of the velvet-lined chest where my mother kept her jewels. The colors were more brilliant than those of ordinary vegetables. Ruby apples, amethyst plums, topaz squash, and sapphire berries. I saw fruits and vegetables that I had never seen before, like the long yellow fruit that grew in bunches like fingers, and enormous striped melons as big as a horse's head. They seemed to have everything. Everything but beans. A man with a scraggly beard and a shock of white hair watched us approach. He was so short that his chin could have rested on the countertop, yet his hands were enormous, and I could see the swell of his muscles under his brown jerkin. The cow standing behind him was entirely white, but for the tip of her nose and her enormous dark eyes. I decided that she had to be Milky White. I was opening my mouth to ask about the bean when Edric reached for a plum, squeezing it between his thumb and forefinger. The man's eyes were crossed, so it was hard to tell exactly where he was looking, but it was clear that he'd noticed Edric.
"Can I help you?" he said. "We have a policy here. You touch it, you buy it."
He pointed to a sign on the table written in glowing script. "You touch it, you buy it. No free samples, no refunds. Shoplifters will be persecuted by harpies."
"How many plums would you like?" the man asked. "They're magic plums, so they're guaranteed to be delicious."
"Four," said Edric. "What we're really looking for are magic beans," I said.
The man shifted his gaze in my direction.
We don't have any now. They're not in season. Come back in 6 months. We should have some by then.
We need them to counteract a spell, said Edric. We can't wait 6 months.
Sorry, I can't help you. I traded my last beans for milky white. That'll be 1 penny for 4 plums.
Is there anyone else who might have some? I asked. Maybe Milky White's former owner could spare one. The cow blinked her long, dark lashes.
Those are gone, too. Jack told me that his mother threw them out the window when he brought them home.
Bosley grunted and scratched his nose.
As I said, come back in 6 months. You can buy as many beans as you want then.